Hey, this is This Week in Self-Hosted. I'm your host, Ethan. This week, I am joined by guest co-host Daniel Brendel, the developer of the plant tracker and management application, HortusFox. Daniel, thanks a bunch for joining me. I'm going to give you a little opportunity to talk about HortusFox when we get to the updates. I know there was an update this week that you released, but for now, we have a lot of content to cover, so let's jump into it. I want to kick off this week's newsletter with an article, actually, Daniel, that you brought to my attention that somehow has flown under my radar. And it's an article that talks a little bit about some of the issues the .io domain is facing right now. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So thanks. I found this interesting. So apparently the .io domain is going into changes. So it is purely owned by the UK, and it's called the British Indian Ocean Territory, and as a rule, they have to return it to Mauritius. So there are various possibilities of outcomes here. So there are some authorities who then would say that the IO domain, it's a country code top-level domain. And when returning the British Indian Ocean Territory to Mauritius, it becomes like non-existent. So country code top-level domain must be associated with an existing country. So this could lead to the discontinuation of the domain. I personally don't believe this will happen in that way. So there are some outcomes here also mentioned in the article. It could be continued as a country code top-level domain with an exception, or the worst case is it could be entirely removed and people had to migrate to different domains. I personally believe it will be operate as a stateless country code top-level domain. There would also be the possibility to become a generic top-level domain, but from my understanding, you have to a top-level domain has to have at least 3 characters, and country code domains have to have at least 2 characters, and this stateless country code top-level already happened in the past with the SU domain, it's a former Soviet Union, and yeah, so I personally believe this is eventually what comes out of that. Of course, right now no one knows, and it's only been recently that it was determined that UK has to return the domain to Mauritius. So, and Mauritius already have a top-level country code domain. So,
This is interesting. I'm not sure if I'm just ignorant, but I had no idea the .io domain was attached to a company. I didn't realize it was I didn't realize it was a country code top-level domain. And so this is very interesting to me. I also didn't realize your tidbit about the generic top-level domains needing to be 3 letters instead of 2. That's also new to me. I have to agree with you that I think it's probably... I don't think it's going anywhere. I can see it also living as a stateless country code top-level domain, which we can see in the bottom of the article here, just because it's so big, especially in the tech world. Yeah. And I think that's why I didn't realize it was a country code, because IO is just such like a technical... the first thing I think of is just, you know, its technical meaning in the computing world. And we talked a little bit about how there are a lot of big things riding on it. I think one of the things that came up was the GitHub container registry we talked about. Yep. That's .io. So many Docker images are published there and tied to that. And I can't imagine how many Docker run and compose files point to that domain. So that would be a little bit of an issue if something were to happen to that. So I was thinking, before you just mentioned this, the generic TLD would probably just shift over to something like that. But if there is some sort of rule about it having to be 3 letters, I could see it becoming stateless, like the Soviet Union .su domain.
Yeah. So, right. Yeah, that, Yeah, that's what it's eventually going to, I think, because so many, as you mentioned, so many technical stuff, GitHub, container registry, also the GitHub documentation, GitHub IO, and many more. So I don't see that we lose this domain in future. So yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot riding on it. And when you brought it up, I was like, oh, is that Hortus Fox is that website using .io? But it's not. I think you are using .com.
Yeah,
for Hortus Web?
For the official website, yeah. But yeah. I also use for the Docker image, but I'm also using GitHub Container Registry, so GHCRIO. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
So yeah. Hortus Fox would be affected by this as well.
I mean, I'm sure GitHub would come up with some smooth way to transition people away, but again, I agree with you. I don't think it's going anywhere.
No.
So super interesting article. I'll try and keep an eye on it moving forward and include updates. Again, it had somehow flown under my radar before now. And maybe it's because it's not, people just aren't as concerned as maybe some of these articles make it sound like we should be, but certainly interesting to monitor moving forward.
Yeah.
A couple other things happening in the news this week. Oddly enough, at least here in America, it was Thanksgiving. So the holiday, I always expect it to be a slow week. But it wasn't, at least in the self-hosting, open source technology world. So I feel like I had more news, software updates, and then community content. And maybe community content makes sense because people had a little more free time if those are off, or at least if you're in a part of the world that celebrates Thanksgiving. But still a lot going on. Raspberry Pi has a compute module that they updated this week that gives a little more power. To be frank, I wasn't sure what people were using this for. And so I had to dig into what the compute modules even are and what people are leveraging them for. Because I think everywhere I looked when this came up is it talked about embedded applications. And so I had to dig into a little bit. And in the self-hosting world, I was trying to find instances where this is leveraged to just this kind of like portable computing power or single circuit board that people can use to leverage in their projects. Home Assistant Yellow is what popped up for me. I am a Home Assistant guy. I don't use Home Assistant Yellow. It is their own hardware. But apparently it leverages the Raspberry Pi compute module. If anyone is using a Home Assistant Yellow who's listening to this, I did find an article. I don't have it linked in the newsletter. I'm happy to drop it in the video description and show notes. They actually have been working with the Raspberry Pi Foundation to support this new module 5. It sounds like most people won't notice a difference if they upgrade from 4 to 5. If you're using something like ESP Home, it sounds like if you're running a ton of stuff, the compilation times might be improved. Or if you're using speech to text in Home Assistant, you might see some improvements there. And I think the article I had read said most people who aren't power users probably won't notice a difference. So no need to stay on top of that if you're not a power user. The other article I wanted to bring up, interesting. I know a lot of people who listen and read my newsletter are self-hosting via cloud storage, like a VPS or something. Hetzner is a very well-known name in the cloud storage space. And just a day or two ago, I came across some articles on Hacker News that talked about them raising prices. I will say, Daniel, it's really interesting. I could not find an article on this from like an actual, what I would say is like a news website. And maybe stuff will pop up today. Maybe it was the holiday. All I could link to is this blog that I had found actually on Hacker News. It made its way to the front page of Hacker News that just talks about raising prices. So if you're a Hetzner user, maybe want to look into that and see how you might be impacted and if there are better places to go, if that's now out of your price range. And then lastly, Daniel, are you a Plex user at all?
No.
No? Okay. I know there are a lot of Plex users in the self-hosted world. It's a gateway to self-hosting for a lot of folks. Last week they dropped a new mobile app for both Android and iOS. There's a public beta if people would like to join and test it out. It is a separate app from the current mobile app. So I have a link in the newsletter as well for anyone who'd like to check that out. With that being said, we're going to pivot a little bit, talk about software updates. Daniel, I'm going to kick it off to you to chat a little bit about what's going on with Hortus Fox this week. And then maybe if anything else stuck out to you, and it'd be a great time to chat about that and hear piqued your curiosity this week.
Yeah. So, yeah, I released a new version of FortisFox 3.8 last week, November 23rd. So, one of the more biggest feature changes is that previously to this update, if you use the plant recognition feature, it would just choose the most likely plant. So you would upload a photo of a plant just for the plant recognition. It wouldn't be stored, or it would not be used as a preview. The backend API plant using PlantNet would just check for what's the most likely plant, and then store it in your plant details. And sometimes this can be wrong. So I wanted the users to select what from a list what kind of plants this would be. So I implemented this. So when the response from the API server comes back, then you can choose from a list with a percentage of how likely what kind of plant this is. And then you can also do your own research. What I would love to have in future is also preview photos of the names of the plant that were returned, but I couldn't find any way that this is possible. Also, the API seems not to offer this. At least from the free tier. So I only testing the free tier. Maybe in future. I think I should contact them and suggest this as a new feature, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds like a reasonable ask. At least I would think.
Yeah, and this is something you see in other plant apps that are very big. So mostly they will show also an image, and it also it's very helpful. So yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Another thing I had some problems with the weather feature, specifically related to daylight saving time, and I believed I fixed this, but unfortunately it introduced another bug. So it
oh
works,
no!
It works in like 1 in 3 time zones, which is not ideal, of course.
Better than nothing? I don't know.
Yeah, it's. Entire weather forecast will break. I have to refactor this entire algorithm I implemented. So, and this is planned for the next version. And also a couple of more things, like if you wanted to edit a quantity in your inventory, you would prior to this update, you would click these buttons, these action buttons, like incrementing by one step, which is kind of tedious if you're like. Stored like 3 items and now you have bought like 50 and I want to click this. No one wants to click that.
No, definitely not.
So I made it so that you can edit it with the entire data when you click on edit an inventory item. So yeah. And I'm not really much of a Chrome user, but I discovered that there were 2 scroll bars when you open the web page. removed this. There's some static scroll bar who does nothing, and it just happens on Chrome desktop. So I fixed this. Yeah, and
that's bizarre.
I also added sorting and filter for the list view in the location, which is pretty important. And yeah. Mm-hmm. So these are the major things like for this update.
Yeah. So Daniel, did you work on this release yourself, or were there any other contributors?
I worked on this myself, but it was related to some community members who raised some issues. This is pretty helpful because I didn't notice this daylight saving time issue, for instance, and this is great. So I really encourage the community to. Raise issues, I'm also really loving pull requests. Of course, because there's an issue that is over a year old, and it's the recurring task feature. I have to wrap my head around this, but I'm really thankful that some people want to contribute, because it's intended as a community project in the end, right?
Right.
So it's open source.
If anyone's listening and can help Daniel out with that particular feature, definitely reach out. I'm just impressed at how quickly you're releasing new updates to this. It's a great project, and I feel like every couple of weeks I'm seeing something big come across. So especially if you're doing a lot of this on your own. I'm very impressed.
Yeah. It's really a hard project, right? So it's currently it's my main project. So and I really want to put as much love into this project as possible. So it definitely has my main focus currently. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's great, and I know we've talked about it a lot. It comes up in my newsletter often, and just a couple of weeks ago, I chatted about it on a previous episode. So if anyone's looking for something like this, definitely recommend checking it out. Daniel, did anything else in the software updates section catch your eye?
Yeah, there is this application called Redek. I don't know how to pronounce it correctly, but...
I think it's Redek.
Redek, yep. Yeah. And this is pretty interesting because it saves articles of newspapers pages. So it often happened that I stumbled or wanted to read a newsletter article in the past and it was just gone. Even if you switch to Wikipedia and want to see the sources, sometimes news pages are cited and then they're gone. And this tool archives this for you, so it scrapes the content of the news page if it's publicly viewable, and then you have it like forever. So, and this is pretty neat. I discovered this recently, and I think I will use this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great application. It's actually what I cover in the content spotlight of this week's newsletter. Every week, I just spotlight a single application. And funny enough, Redek pops up this week also in the update section, which is why we're talking about it here. It added some filters and some other kind of nice-to-have features on the application. But you're right, it is fantastic. I spun it up for the first time a few weeks ago and have been using it. And to me, it's great for two things. It has the archiving, which you're talking about. If you're trying to capture a web page at a static point in time and you just want to know what it looked like and what the content was, knowing that it could change, the author could go back and update or revise it, or it could just disappear altogether, Redek is going to help you capture that. But it's also very nice for reading, because when you capture a link or web page with Redek, it will parse through the page and only grab the relevant content and just provide you with a really nice view of the text and maybe any relevant photos or anything else it might have found relevant or thought was relevant from the article. So it's also a better reading experience. If you've ever come across those websites that are so obnoxious where you read a paragraph and then there's an ad and then you read another paragraph and then there's an ad, you don't get any of that with Redek or any application like it. Hoarder's another big one that people are using as a read later application. So that's kind of the secondary benefit. I love long form, interesting articles. And so it's really nice to use something like Redek to digest that content rather than having to scroll through the sites and just get through the awful layouts or whatever other, you know, garbage content they have on there, like advertisements and stuff. Recognizing that advertising is important for, you know, keeping websites running, but sometimes they're just so invasive and intrusive. Yeah. It's nice to not have to worry about them, especially on mobile.
Yeah.
So, great. The only thing I wanted to bring up this week in the software updates, is I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly. Dwarik.
Yeah. It's actually German, it seems, because, if you click it, then in the somewhere I saw this that it's like da war ich, it's German for I was here, like, and I somewhere I found it written like the German word, so maybe it's from a German author.
It must be, and that makes sense because it's like a location tracking app, so given the context of what you're saying it means in German, that would make sense. But the reason it popped up in the software updates section this week is because they added integration with image photo libraries. So now you can display image photos on the map, or at least the photos that are relevant to a point or location on the map. And then another update, there are kind of two updates this week. They also create a new trips feature where people can create and manage their trips, and you can also attach image photos to that as well. And I bring it up because I feel like I talk about Image almost every single week. The last several weeks, there have been companion apps popping up for sharing image libraries. And so now we have this popping up that has image integration. So I know there are a lot of image users in the self-hosting world. So I thought this would be interesting bringing up if anyone has an image library and wants something like Dvarij, then that is that's available and another tool that seems like it's working well with Image, or is at least designed to start working with it. So check that out if you're interested. Going to shift quickly to breaking changes, and then we'll jump into new software and community content to finish up. A couple different breaking changes: Image Frame, Pocket ID, Scratch Map, Sterling PDF all have some breaking changes. If you're running any of them, please check out the breaking changes. Read the release notes before you update. Don't just blindly update to them. Many of them just have different environment variable names, so they might have renamed something that existed before. The other thing I wanted to talk about, or make sure people are aware of, Porkbun is a very popular domain registrar in the self-hosting world, and they are getting ready to update their API, and I think it's the link at which people need to use to for their software to speak to their API. And so I have an article from the Linux server team that's talking about the breaking changes that are coming to one of their containers because of this. And of course, the update is easy if you're maintaining a project that's leveraging the API. You just point it to, I think it's api.porkbun.com rather than just porkbun.com. And I know I'm a Caddy user and I use their Porkbun DNS module, and I know they're working through on updating that, but just be aware if you're a Porkbun user, if you know you're working, you have a project that leverages an API key that you might have set up for Porkbun, just check out those projects. If they're not aware of it, make them aware of it or contribute if you have the skills and experience to do that yourself. But just be aware that is happening. Gonna pivot from here to the new software. Daniel, you and I were chuckling a bit about some of the things that popped up this week. As usual, a lot of great new software. We're going to kind of poke fun at some of the names this week as we talk about them. But that in no way is meant to discourage people from checking them out or using them. Again, people took time and effort to write and create these applications, so I would not want to ever discourage people discourage them from exploring and maybe deploying them themselves. But in the self-hosted world, I just find more and more that there's such fascinating names that pop up for some of these new projects. And so Daniel, you specifically mentioned this minimal pastebin that popped up. EBPB, I guess is how we're supposed to pronounce it. I don't know how else we would pronounce it. I thought it was hilarious. I think it popped up on Reddit, is how I found it. EBPB, which once you get it down, it actually feels really cool to say. I don't know why. This is a minimal pastebin that someone had created. And actually, what I found also entertaining was they have kind of a frequently asked questions section on the repo that's very cheeky. Like the one is, really, you had no easy way to do this? What about all the other pastebin apps out there? And they just respond, I like making my own stuff and hosting my own stuff. Sorry. Is this secure? I doubt it. Like, it's about 100 lines of code. I'm sure it can be broken to pieces. I just kind of enjoy that. And maybe there should be some concern about running that if that's how that's how laissez-faire they are about security. But I thought it was interesting and pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I like the last one. I want a new feature. Can you add? No, but feel free to do it yourself. it's funny. But yeah, I agree with the one thing here. I like making my own stuff. I completely understand that. So this is also my personal how I do it. So, but I also want to read it like easy peasy because it's simplistic and easy. Yes. But I don't know, maybe it's EBPB, but it's interesting because the generated URL for the paste are fruits, so two fruits. I'm not familiar really with Python, but I looked at the code and it generates it has a word list with apple, banana, or grape. So it will generate like combination of two words like banana dash mango, and then you tell your friend so he can open the software in the browser and then browse to the page. So I can see this is an interesting thing if you are, I don't know, with another person, I want to share quickly some notes or stuff like that. So, and it's
an interesting approach. You're not sharing a URL that has like 50 random characters in it. Yeah, much easier. Daniel, I was taking a sip of my water as you mentioned that last section. I almost spit it out. I'm a little embarrassed, but that is hilarious. Also popping up this another project called Conscious Cravings, which I think is supposed to be a dashboard for your kitchen that cycles through different photos of food and recipes that are meant to be a reminder as you're brainstorming things to eat or things to make, just to help you make more conscious decisions as to what you're eating. Again, that's a very atypical name for a project. I thought that was interesting. There's a project that popped up, I can't remember if it was earlier this year or last year, called specifically Clementines, which was the first time I was really like, where on earth did that name come from? But it clearly works from a marketing perspective, because I remember it and I will never forget it. I see it pop up occasionally, so not that I would have forgotten it in my feeds. But again, another one that just is a little bit of a head scratcher at first. And then the last thing we were joking about a little bit earlier, this actually just popped up. I only saw it today before we started recording, another Reddit project that popped up, a manager for bookmarks. So something akin to Link Warden or LinkDing or something like that. That's actually just called Bookmark Manager. Very generic. Again, nothing wrong with this. You can call your project whatever you want, but it will be very hard to ever talk about this project if it gains traction, because people aren't going to know whether I'm talking about a specific project or if I'm just talking about bookmark managers in general. So still a cool minimal project for people who aren't looking for all the bells and whistles and some of the frills of the other projects that I just mentioned a few seconds ago. So check it out if you're interested, if you're looking for a bookmark manager. With that being said, Daniel, we're going to pivot away from new software, chat a little bit about community content to finish us up here. First article is where I think we were going to spend most of our time here. I'm very interested on your thoughts, especially as a developer of a self-hosted platform. This kind of made its rounds last week after I'd published last week's newsletter, so I wasn't able to include it. So I wanted to make sure we talked about it today. It's called Self-Hosting Isn't a Solution, It's a Patch. And it talks a little bit about, I think the author's stance is that our ultimate goal shouldn't necessarily be to be able to self-host things, because it's just not feasible. Some people don't have the resources or the skills or the capabilities to self-host things. So from that regard, our goal shouldn't be self-hosting, but working towards a framework where we can hold some of these companies accountable for what they do with our data. But it also talks about how self-hosting has kind of become a little bit of an enabler for these companies who, when they're faced with something like regulation, they can point and say, oh, you know, well, we're closed source, but there are all these open source self-hosted alternative that exist. Should people not want this? Or when you have something like Threads, which is Meta or Facebook's version of Twitter or Mastodon, they've enabled federation. So now they've embraced this open source concept, and it might not be the greatest implementation, but now should they ever be faced with regulation or called out for something like that, they can point and say, hey, we're federated. We can speak with all the ActivityPub protocol software out there. You know, don't worry about us. We're not a concern. It's just a really interesting perspective on that. What were you thinking when you read through this?
Yeah, this when I read this, it sounded so familiar with my own experiences. First thing you already mentioned is, self-hosting is a very technical thing, and most people will most likely never get into it and choose to switch to to this all this big tech services. My personal experience regarding, for instance, Mastodon, you don't need to self-host Mastodon, right? I tried to convince a few peers in my close environment to try it out, but people are not really willing to switch, mostly because they get used to, for instance, Instagram, right? They have made themselves comfortable in it, and have all this personal feed, right? And it's hard for them to try something new. They have all their friends, and yeah, this is a problem. I personally believe it's a problem, because it's like natural to be a bit lazy about some things, right? And these tech corporations are very well in using this. And I personally don't. Some corporations will say, "Hey, we are getting into this open source stuff," like mentioned with threats opening up to ActivityPub protocol. I had recently a conversation with a friend who said, "Hey, if you want to integrate AI in your open source project, why not trying Llama, or I don't know how to pronounce this, but if I recall correctly, it's from Meta, right? So, So I personally would not feel comfortable integrating that into my project. I wouldn't do this. Do they want to do something good, or do they want to make money, right? So, in the end, I mean, and this is something I would never want my users to experience, that I integrate such a software. So in the end, that's not going to happen, right? So,
right.
Yeah, and right. From your individual standing, if you can get rid of all this social media stuff and host everything yourself, it's great, right? But it's nothing the general public is eventually going to do, because as this article mentioned, a lack of technology and stuff like that.
I've thought about this a lot in the past week since I read this article, and it's given me a different perspective, and I've had to think a lot about how am I contributing to this. And I'm a big self-hoster, so my goal is to self-host as much as possible, but in doing so, I'm not sure I'm helping or contributing to the problem or solution that this article writer is suggesting. Where the goal isn't for everyone to migrate away from self-hosting, but maybe we do things that are encouraged, whether it's politicians or whoever, to hold these other companies accountable so that more people can have the benefits of self-hosted software without having to self-host the software themselves. So it's really interesting. I'm completely open to feedback to anyone who's reading the newsletter or listening to this episode this week. Feel free to drop some thoughts in the comments as to how you might feel about this or any ideas you have. But I'd love to continue self-hosting, but also feel like I'm contributing to the overall goal here that the author is recommending that people should be striving for. So super interesting article. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about before we wrap up here, and Daniel, I know we talked about you're not a huge smart home person, so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but there's a very well-known project that's popped up in the last couple of years as some of the, hosted garage door opening companies like MyQ have made some decisions that have alienated sections of the open source community. I'm not sure how to pronounce this as another name. I say Ratgadoo. No idea if that's how I should pronounce it. I probably should have watched a YouTube video to see how other people pronounce it. This is, you can build it yourself, or it's hardware you can buy, made by someone who is essentially enabling people to make their garage door openers smart. I actually have it for one of my garage door openers. Very popular. And I saw this pop up this week in my feed that there's another company or project entity of some sort who has revisited this and has improved upon this idea. I guess in the past there have been some concerns about the security and viability of the Ratgadoo project, and so This is a really interesting forum post this connected entity made on, hey, here's we really liked what Rackadoo does. We saw some issues or some flaws, and so we improved upon it. And so I thought this might be relevant for people, especially as the holidays are coming up. I think I just added a Rackadoo device myself to my own wish list that I gave to my partner, because I still have a garage door that's not smart. But this has made me rethink, okay, maybe I might want to pivot and I should be interested in the hardware that this entity is talking about. Not saying everyone should just blindly trust this blog post. Please do your research, see what the community and other experts and people are saying. But really interesting, because I didn't realize there were security concerns around the Rackadoo project. So thought this might be helpful for some folks. With that being said, we are going to wrap it up here. We're just over 30 minutes. Daniel, thanks so much for joining me. Really happy to have you on, especially because I feel like I talk about Hortus Fox so much. I'd love to connect in a future format, maybe an interview podcast, to talk more about Hortus Fox and your development process, and just you even more personally as a home labber or self-hoster. In the meantime, is there anywhere people can find you online if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. And you can check out my GitHub. And I also have a homepage, danielbrendel.com. Also, you can find me on Mastodon. So these are the three most important things, I would say.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And I'll include links to those in the video description below for anyone who's watching this. And then again, I'm Ethan. You can find me at my website, selfhost, selfh.st. And I also have a personal landing page, ethanshally.com, that has links to some of my socials if you'd like to connect with me there. Otherwise, Daniel, thanks again for joining me, and have a great weekend, everyone.
Have a great weekend.